From having no particular faculty to experience, the being reaches a point where it can experience and create 100% perfectly both spiritually and physically, this result being the fulfillment of the conditions for being able to experience the very highest happiness or the very culmination of the experience of life. As the being, at the beginning of a spiral cycle, thus begins to unite with physical matter, and little by little quite automatically develops its physical organism with which it can begin to experience and create in physical matter, it, by virtue of this experience, comes under the law of life for perfect experience and creation. This determines that this creation absolutely must be logical, whether it be a matter of behavior or any sort of creation in physical matter itself. Where this does not occur, the experience of life becomes catastrophic. Chapter 18: The recreation of the living being's consciousness in each new spiral cycle. As the living being at the beginning of each new spiral cycle has no particular faculty for physical consciousness, this faculty having long since degenerated in the previous spiral, just as its spiritual consciousness is also very minimal, since it lives only on the memories from the same previous spiral and is thus a sleeping being when viewed from the outer world, its consciousness must be recreated again. This occurs automatically through the influences of nature on the formation of its organism, and, with this influence, the being's own incipient sensory perception gradually emerges. And through this sensory perception it itself begins to acquire consciousness and can thus take part in its own evolution or creation of consciousness. But as life stipulates that logic be a condition in all creation, and logic can exist only as a result of wisdom or intellectuality, the being here will experience an epoch in which its co-determination in its own experience of life and creation is more or less unreliable, and can indeed be downright catastrophic. It does not yet have the necessary intellectuality or sense of logic in order to fulfill the law of life or the law for all manifestation and creation. In order to fulfill this law 100%, any creation would have to be a joy and blessing for living beings. If this were not so, it would not conform to life's own logic and would thus in actual fact be extremely illogical. It would go against the very universes or the Godhead's own creation. Chapter 19: Sufferings are cosmic sources of wisdom and constitute the road to love or the culmination of the experience of life, as the entire universe or cosmos constitutes a unit maintained eternally by the previously mentioned logic or the fact that everything has to be a joy and blessing for living beings. Every course of action that is not on this wavelength will sooner or later cause a short circuit. This short circuit will thus constitute a greater or smaller catastrophe or unhappy fate for the being in question. But through the catastrophe or short circuit this being learns how it should act, and how it should not act. In this way wisdom gradually becomes an integral part of the being. And as the sufferings or catastrophes in a similar way also cause humaneness and love to become integral parts of the being's mode of existence, we see how God creates the human being in his image after his likeness. And we see here that suffering is an absolute necessity for the human being in order that it can attain cosmic consciousness and become one with God. As the sufferings are a result of mistakes or illogical acts, they absolutely cannot constitute any kind of punishment for sins. When analyzed cosmically, they are sources of wisdom and are thus the road to light, to love, to the experience of God and thereby to the culmination of the experience of life. Chapter 20: The being's acquisition of the most perfect ability to think and the cessation of reincarnation. Through physical existence the being gradually becomes illuminated by wisdom and love, and acquires the faculty to experience life at its height of perfection. On the physical plane it learns everything that it could not possibly learn on the spiritual plane. As matter on the spiritual plane automatically obeys the being's spiritual energy impulses without any resistance whatsoever, it cannot possibly learn to think in this kind of matter. In order that the spiritual energy impulses that the being is able to send out by means of its spiritual structure can take the form of thought, the being must inevitably learn to convert these impulses of energy into thoughts or mental constructions. It can learn to do this only on the physical plane, since matter on this plane does not automatically obey thought, but must be overcome by a mental or physical release of energy. Since it is a vital necessity to think logically when one is in the physical organism, one thus becomes accustomed to transforming one's spiritual energy impulses into logical thought forms or mental constructions in physical matter. Through this ability, it therefore also becomes easy to fashion one's thoughts in mental substance or spiritual matter alone, without any connection with physical matter. The thoughts then become just as perceptible to the spiritual senses as their construction in physical matter is perceptible to the physical senses. But while the constructions in physical matter are solid and firm owing to the denser nature of this matter, the spiritual constructions are of a more refined nature and are maintained exclusively by virtue of the being's temporary will or temporary mental concentration. Quite apart from the incorporation of these mental constructions in the being's sphere of memory, they stand or fall with the being's concentration or will. Gradually, as the being's physical life proceeds in evolution, it acquires knowledge and gains experiences that, as mental images, form part of its consciousness, just as it itself, from the knowledge and experience it acquires through physical sensory perception, can manifest new mental constructions in physical matter. And thus the being's experience of life becomes an interplay of the experience and the creation of mental constructions. When the being has eventually evolved to the highest, most perfect level of thinking and humaneness, it cannot learn any more on the physical plane of existence. It can now produce its creation much more easily and perfectly in spiritual matter than in physical matter. And thus its rebirth in physical matter stops. Reincarnation has become superfluous. The being subsequently continues its passage of experiencing and creating through the great cosmic cycle in a perpetual spiritual existence. The living being experiences this existence in the following spiritual spheres or kingdoms: the kingdom of wisdom, the divine world, and the kingdom of bliss. Here we find life's absolutely most perfect and therefore primary existence. Here the beings live at the very height of perfection. Here they experience the very culmination of the experience of life in the spiral cycle's epoch of light. Chapter 21. The spiritual world is the land of joy and happiness, while the physical worlds is God's workshop for the creation of the human being in God's image. The above-mentioned perfect existence would be an impossibility if it were not isolated in such a way that only beings of the same mental wavelength could come into contact with this perfect existence or way of experiencing life. If all unfinished human beings could assert themselves here to among beings of the higher mental wavelengths, as is the case on the physical plane, the spiritual world would be just as dark, bleak and imperfect as the physical world can be for the unfinished human being. Indeed, here there would even be war, a war made by unfinished human beings. But, thanks to the divine world order, this is absolutely not the case. The spiritual world is intended to be nothing but the fruit of perfect thinking, the blessing and joy at overcoming matter that follows from this perfect thinking. The joy at having become the master of life instead of being its slave. The joy at having become one with love, wisdom and omnipotence. The joy at having become one with God. The spiritual world is the land of happiness and joy, while the physical world is the melting pot, the mold or God's workshop for the creation of the perfect human being in His image. Here the being is filed, cleaned and polished. Here it learns to overcome egoisms and primitivities disfiguring animal mode of existence and appearance in order ultimately to shine and sparkle in the Godhead's all-overwhelming halo of rays in the culmination of the experience of life. It is not so remarkable that we find problems, sorrows and sufferings on the physical plane of existence, since these phenomena are nothing but waste products and wood shavings from the Godhead's creation of the human being in His image after His likeness. Chapter 22. Death is the gateway to paradise, as this divine creation is not only the creation of organisms but at the same time constitutes the creation of mentality or consciousness. Indeed, constitutes the breathing of the breath of life into the being. It cannot be a creation that affects only unconscious or dead things. Here it is a matter of the transformation of a living being that can gradually and increasingly feel and sense the difference between pleasantness and unpleasantness. And it is precisely during this transformation that we to a marked extent become witnesses to the Creator's or Godhead's all-embracing love, wisdom and omnipotence. As the creation of the human being in God's image spans millions upon millions of years, and as the being from this perspective gains the ability to experience, feel and sense at an early stage, and thereby gains the ability to begin working on an uncertain and faltering creation, it is an extraordinarily great blessing for it that this creation, which, because of its lack of perfection or faltering logic, gives rise to much suffering or dark fate for itself, does not go on perpetually as an uninterrupted continuum. It is, however, divided into a system with pauses. Every time a being here on the physical plane encounters the process we call death, whether it occurs normally through old age or through illness or an accident, it constitutes the being's entry into such a pause in its transformation from primitivity to intellectuality, from brutality to humaneness. Since this pause becomes, as we will see later, an experience of paradise for the being, death is thus in reality the gateway to paradise. Chapter 23. Death is a vital necessity for the attainment of the highest bodily and mental perfection, as the unfinished or undeveloped beings on the awake physical plane know nothing of their spiritual structure and existence, since it is not directly accessible to the physical senses and cannot yet be transferred by means of memory to the being's physical day consciousness. There has, in the worst cases, arisen the superstition that this liberation from the physical organism, which the beings experience during the above-mentioned process of death, is an absolute death, an absolute cessation of this being's experience of life and existence. But since the physical organism does not constitute the real being but constitutes merely a temporarily constructed instrument for the being's temporary step in evolution and the fulfillment of the specific conditions of life at this stage, the being does not die just because it loses its physical organism. On the contrary, this liberation from its physical organism is actually a vital necessity for the being's continued evolution or transformation. How could beings transform themselves from plants to animals, and from animals to the present terrestrial human beings, and how could these in turn be transformed from their present unfinished state to the divine state in which they are totally transformed into human beings in God's image if the opportunity for them to replace their physical organisms was not created at the same time? These organisms are designed so that they can be injured, in order that the beings can thereby experience the sufferings that they, by virtue of their mistakes or the unfinished state of their mode of existence, must of necessity come to experience in order, through this, to learn to avoid the mistakes and become 100% perfect in both bodily and spiritual manifestations, and thereby experience the culmination of life in the experience of light and well-being. As the being's erroneous manifestations can be so far-reaching that the effects of these can completely destroy their physical organisms, so as to render them totally useless as instruments for experiencing and manifesting on the physical plane, it is thus an extraordinarily great divine blessing for the beings in question that they can be freed from these wrecks of organisms and again each have the opportunity to build up a new physical organism. As the being, through its physical epoch of evolution, grows through higher and higher forms of life experience and manifestation, it is also here a vital necessity for it that, for every new higher form of physical life experience and manifestation it grows into, it acquires a corresponding, new, physical form of organism by virtue of which it can experience and manifest itself perfectly in contact with the specific laws or conditions for experiencing life pertaining to this new sphere of life experience and manifestation. It would not be very good if today's refined and highly developed, humane, cultured human being, through replacing its organisms or being reborn, had not long since been liberated from the lizard organisms, ape organisms and primitive, prehistoric human organisms that were vital necessities for it to inhabit in its previous epochs of evolution in order for it to be able to attain the relatively highly developed state of manifestation and life experience in which it exists today. We see here that the so-called process of death is an absolutely indispensable link in the divine creation of the human being in God's image. As a further confirmation of the necessity of death, there is also the commonly known cause of death, namely the decrepitude of the organism during old age and its ensuing unfitness as an instrument for physical experience of life and creation. As the above-mentioned organism is a created phenomenon, it must of necessity, like other created phenomena, be subject to time and space. It is thus, of necessity, perishable. It hereby constitutes a contrast to the being's very highest spiritual structure, which, in its fundamental essence, has never been created and therefore cannot be subject to time and space. The being's highest spiritual structure constitutes its Ion superconsciousness. As this structure is eternally imperishable and constitutes the real living being behind the physical organism, the same being can thus easily survive all time and space dimensional things and thereby also the death of its physical organism. Chapter 24. The being's transformed existence after death. When the being is freed from its physical body after death, its existence or experience of life of course changes. It can thus no longer experience and create directly on the physical plane of existence. It has been freed from having to juggle with heavy physical matter and the organism. It is now to manifest its thoughts only in spiritual matter, which is thousands of times lighter than physical matter and quite automatically takes shapes according to the being's will. Therefore, the being's passage through the physical process of death becomes in reality a passage from a large and very heavy field of work to a field of experience that, in relation to the physical, must in itself be regarded very largely as a field of rest. Here it does not need to put its thoughts into words in order to make itself intelligible to its fellow beings, since its thoughts already appear to them as visible details in the spiritual matter around the being before it has put them into words. There are therefore no language problems on the spiritual plane of existence, because all beings here that are at the same stage in evolution can understand one another's thoughts or mental constructions. On this plane, mental activity is experienced as an outer phenomenon around the being and can be seen by anyone who can perceive on the wavelength of the being concerned. Thus beings cannot hide their characters. Here their honesty or dishonesty is exposed to their fellow beings. So not every being that has a high position on the physical plane of existence, that is honored and respected as a highly developed being mainly because it belongs to the so-called upper class on this plane and has been able to dazzle its fellow beings with its wealth, luxury, distinguished titles, luxurious palaces, servants and so on, is truly great. These physical luxuries do not count on the spiritual plane because, behind them, there may well lurk a character that is a spiritual proletarian. And if this aspect is present in the human being living in luxury, this being will be helplessly exposed to its fellow beings on the spiritual plane. Here it cannot be concealed by physical luxury, gold and glitter. But in order to understand spiritual existence after death, we must first take a brief look at the living being's experience of life as a whole. The manifestation of the latter being is experienced essentially as thinking. This is in turn the same as letting the object of the thought take form and become an image. As previously mentioned, this image formation occurs in the first instance in spiritual matter and is triggered quite automatically by the individual's spiritual structure, just as the being in turn, through this structure's spiritual sensory organs, experiences the image formation. It is this spiritual thought process that constitutes the being's primary experience of life and that occurs in its purest spiritual form in those situations where the being is liberated from its physical organism and does not have to build up its thoughts in physical matter. As this spiritual experience of life is limited to being built up only of the kinds of thought that promote happiness and joy, spiritual existence is thus absolutely paradisiacal for every living being beyond its physical death. Chapter 25 Purgatory and Paradise. Since any primitive tendencies or derailments that the beings on the spiritual plane have are exposed to their surroundings and cannot thus be hidden from their fellow beings, their transition to the spiritual plane will be a painful one. In my main work I have termed this unpleasant transition to the above-mentioned psychic plane purgatory. If the human being hates or feels bitter towards a fellow being, or has pangs of conscience and dies or is liberated from its physical existence in this state of mind, this will likewise give rise to an experience of purgatory on the spiritual plane. The whole of this dark state of mind now appears on the spiritual plane as an external condition. And the being cannot get onto the wavelength of any thoughts that are not of the same kind as its own. Here it thus meets only bitter and angry beings in the same state of mind as that in which it finds itself. And as it no longer has the physical organism to sense through, it cannot see the physical sky, the physical sunshine, the beautiful physical landscapes, green forests and flowery meadows, or any of the many other divine blessings that nature uses to enliven the dark soul. Here it thus finds itself in a world of more or less night-black shadows. Here there is no external nature other than that which can be created or imagined by its own sphere of thought and that of like-minded beings. And as long as bitterness or anger dominates, its own ideas, as well as those of like-minded fellow beings, can be but humdrum and bleak. And they cannot possibly come out of this dismal wavelength condition as long as they feel bitterness or anger towards anyone or anything. But the fact that the beings have thus become spiritually isolated from all mental light makes them feel unhappy as quickly as is possible. And with this feeling the desire for help arises automatically. At the very moment that this feeling or kind of thought arises in the being's psyche, it constitutes a wavelength that the guardian angels can get into contact with. These angels can then liberate the being from the above-mentioned dark thought or this entire dark complex of consciousness. The being can then enter into that state of consciousness or way of experiencing life that constitutes the ultimate ideal existence or culminating happiness that it can grasp. In Levitsburg I have termed this epoch of culminating happiness on the spiritual plane paradise. Absolutely all existing living beings have such an experience of paradise on the spiritual plane while they are relieved of physical existence, an experience they have until they are born again on the material plane and have a new physical organism. But absolutely not all beings will experience purgatory. Those who live out their terrestrial lives in contact with their innermost perception of life and are not in any kind of mental conflict with other beings, or themselves, will not experience purgatory. Chapter 26 Death as a Divine Liberation from Old Age, Illness, Sorrow and Suffering. The being's old age causes it to experience death as a glorious divine liberation from a physical organism that has become feeble and more or less inept as an instrument for experiencing physical life. For a being with an organism wrought by incurable disease and suffering, death or liberation from this organism comes likewise as a very great divine blessing. Death is also a great divine blessing for those beings whose organisms have been fatally injured in accidents. This liberation will, in all situations, mean a complete liberation from physical pain. It is true that from a mental point of view there can be a slight process of purgatory for those beings that die suddenly in accidents. The consciousness of such beings is focused on plans for the future and life experiences on the physical plane, which they are now abruptly prevented from experiencing. This can of course give rise to disappointment and sorrow. But here too the beings quickly focus on seeking help in their distress, and in so doing they are immediately placed under the care of guardian angels and are liberated from everything that can be felt as physical darkness in their consciousness. After this they can then experience what appears to their faculty of perception as paradise. Chapter 27 The spiritual plane of existence is a world of culminating light for all living things while the physical world constitutes a plane of existence where beings can experience the effects of their mistakes, these effects culminating in pain and suffering. The spiritual plane is, on the other hand, the diametrical opposite of this. This plane is intended to be absolutely nothing but a plane of existence where beings can experience the effects of their highest degree of perfection. It is therefore the plane of existence of absolute joy and happiness. It is a world of culminating light for all living things. Here no dark shadows can interfere with a being's ideal existence. Here there is only mental light, light and more light. Chapter 28. The reciprocal mental copies of the spiritual and the physical worlds. The being's spiritual structure and thinking are not accessible to its physical senses. These two phenomena could therefore be neither seen nor observed on the physical plane if the being were not equipped with a physical organism with which it could give its thinking form in purely physical matter, thereby making its formation of images visible to physical senses. The physical organism is thus in itself only an extension organ for the creation of mental images. When we see buildings, houses, machines, tools, means of transport and so on, they constitute, as I have mentioned previously, only copies of their originators in their mental images produced in physical matter. If they did not exist first in this way, their appearance on the physical plane would have been an absolute impossibility. Through the physical organism, the living beings thus acquire the ability to copy in physical matter their mental images that appear on the spiritual plane. It is thereby established as fact that the details of the physical world are out and out copies of the spiritual world's details, image formations, shapes, colors and sounds. But as the living being, through its physical organism, can also sense the mental constructions and image formations of its fellow beings copied or revealed in physical matter, these thus also become mental images in the consciousness of this being. Through this, the spiritual world to a certain degree will also come to consist of copies of created physical phenomena or mental constructions experienced through physical sensory perception. Chapter 29. The living being's consciousness and mental images. As previously mentioned, the living being builds up its consciousness from the experiences it acquires through its physical sensory perception. These experiences are transferred through the being's physical senses to its spiritual structure and here become spiritual mental images. Such spiritual mental images comprise the being's consciousness. By virtue of these mental images, which constitute experiences and knowledge, the being can in turn form new mental images that can be experienced not only on the spiritual plane but can also be transferred, through the physical organism, to the physical plane and here be fashioned in physical matter as pure image formation or in writing and speech, in sound and color. Thus a being's consciousness consists partly of image formations that are copies of its outer surroundings, and partly of image formations that are its own original ones. The being expresses its consciousness through these original mental constructions and the thought form copies of the mental images from the physical world, just as they also form the basis for the being's view of life and its ensuing moral perception, desire, exercise of will, sympathies and antipathies. Chapter 30. The living being's two sensory horizons, the physical and the spiritual. As we have already learnt, the living being has two sensory horizons, a spiritual one and a physical one. While the spiritual horizon is permanent, the physical is only periodic, since the physical body, which is a created phenomenon and is therefore like all other created phenomena, must perish. The being has therefore periods in its experience of life during which it experiences and creates with its spiritual senses alone. These periods begin at the being's liberation from its physical organism at so-called death, and continue until the being is again ready to connect with a new physical organism. During this period the being cannot experience anything directly on the physical plane of existence. It is thus, in reality, completely disappeared from this plane. There remains only the discarded physical organism, which quickly begins to decompose. And since beings are still very imperfect as regards sensing cosmically, and are, indeed, unconscious on the cosmic plane, they can judge only on the basis of what they physically witness. Many believe therefore, as previously mentioned, that the living being stands and falls with its physical organism, and that the being in question, whose physical organism has become a corpse, has completely ceased to exist. Chapter 31 Where the curses upon sin set forth in the Bible occur and where they do not occur. Here we have seen that the being, by virtue of its spiritual and eternal structure, exists just as much after death as it existed before it was born. That it can now no longer experience or create on the physical plane does not mean that it cannot experience or create on the spiritual plane.